we celebrate the big leaps of South Dakota artists. From SDPB, today is Friday, March 21st. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we meet singer-songwriter Amy Dias. She steps into our Black Hills studios to perform, and we'll learn how global travel and a pandemic have influenced her music as she begins to write and perform in the Black Hills. That's coming a bit later in the hour. Visual artist Mecca Rutherford is offering a demonstration of her technique later this month, so we listen back to our original interview about her first major exhibition at the Center for Western Studies Galleries. Plus, one of our favorite artistic leaps from the archives, the Cloverfold, goes from stage to vinyl. We'll talk about their album drop. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Later in the hour, we bring you a performance recorded live from an emerging performing artist in South Dakota. Amy Dias is a singer-songwriter in the Black Hills. Well, that got us thinking about other artists across the state who have taken big artistic leaps recently. And about a year ago, South Dakota's own The Cloverfold launched their first full-length album as a band. So we are revisiting that conversation today. Here is vocalist Erin Castle. She stepped into our studio with some tracks from the album Windfall. This is a big deal.
It feels like a big deal.
To go from the stage performances that you do and find a way to bring that to a studio. It's not easy for anyone. But for this band, for the Cloverfold, there are a lot of moving parts. There are a lot of pieces. There's a lot of harmony. There's a lot of delicate instruments. The arrangements are complex. It was not simple.
That's
to
the truth.
Accomplish.
That's so true.
So let's start with that process of moving what exists in a live experience
exactly.
For us as an audience and for you as a band, and then saying, let's go into this foam padded room and make music.
Yeah, you know, we really did want to make sure that the sound felt live. Yeah. It felt like it still had that energy that we really try to capture. You know, that's where the love is. You know, that's where we feel alive, is on that stage. And we knew that we couldn't do everything full on live and make it perfect. So part of the recording was done as a group. We had Andrew Reinhartz come to Travis's house where we do all of our rehearsals. So they kind of did like several lines in the basement where they all the instruments played together. After a lot of those lines were tracked out, we went to Andrew's house individually and recorded like the individual solos and kind of cleaned up things, went and recorded the harmonies and the lead lines and things like that. So, you know, we wanted to make sure that we still came together as a cohesive unit and it still had that energy. So we made sure that there were several of us there while we were recording. There might have been a little whiskey involved, you know, just to maintain that vocal energy. Yeah. And, you know, it was an incredible experience. Andrew was wonderful and patient, and we all know each other really well. And so we're able to find ways to communicate with each other that gets the best out of each of us. Yeah.
So as a fan, I want to be able to take something home,
mm-hmm.
right? Like I just want to have it in my collection. I want to listen to it more deeply. So what are the lyrics? What are they saying there that I didn't know? Song, again, I want to be able to put you on repeat, which I can't do with a live band. I want to be able to give it to other people, share it with somebody. I think you'll like this. So there's so much in it for the fan. What's in it for the band?
Oh, yeah. Well, we are so like that as well. You know,
yeah.
We're artists in that way. We want something tactile. Myself, I'm a painter, so my contribution in that I don't get to play an instrument. I'm not skilled in that way, like so many of them are. So I got to paint the image, yeah. And we worked through
the cover art.
The cover art, exactly.
Which means you want the LP.
You do want the LP. There is also a CD for those of you that still work in that media, but the vinyl itself is colorful. Yeah. So we have that for the audiophile that also wants that collectible aspect. The inside has all the lyrics typed out. Nice. There's photographs of the band. There's all that content. So there's that physicality, something that you can take with you. There's also the digital download. So we wanted you to have the full package, something that you can bring with you, but also, take that time to put the needle down, listen for those few songs, flip the album, listen through, but something that you can still listen to on the go as well.
Your voice is an instrument, right?
It is something that I get to take with me.
It is an instrument,
yes.
Yeah.
Hey, the stranger, let me ask you. My lover dear, I hear the worst is gonna happen. Alleviate my deepest, darkest fear.
I was just reading an article about the newly released biography of Cass Elliot, written by her daughter, and talking about how Cass could walk into a room and hear somebody play music and say, I know what they need. You two need to meet each other. You need my voice, which is how she ended up kind of, forcing her way into the Mamas and Papas, because she knew that her voice was what that group needed, and she was right. In what ways do you know that you, because you all have this family tree of bands that you've been in and you've played in before, and yet this is new. It works. It's like you needed each other's sound to all come together.
Yeah.
How do you think about that, this group of people, this band, and the family trees that have brought this branch?
I love that. We all came together in 2020. So a lot of the groups that we were in had kind of disbanded. We were growing families, changing careers, life changes, right? Work, things like that. And Travis Jameson is kind of like the uniting link with all of us. We've all played with him in various capacities. Sean and Travis played in Snakebeard Jackson. Travis and I played in the Union Grove Pickers together. We also played in Hard Travelin', which is where Andy Shaw and Connor joined. And Kevin has played with us in a variety, but, this was the first time we all kind of came together. But I know he played with Sean kind of as like a, we all play instruments and we're all looking to get together. So when it all clicked, we all had that moment of realizing it the first time. All of us were in one room and we had learned the same song kind of separately.
Mm-hmm.
And that moment where we had all gotten through it and kind of looked at each other and we're like, oh, okay. Well, I got physical goosebumps and it was a really incredible feeling to hear the way that, my voice and Sean's voice blended and the way that the lap steel brought this like just screeching element through that, this electricity through the acoustic instruments and the banjo that united all of us. I mean, it just felt so right. Yeah. And, we all have these different personalities, these are all my brothers. I'm the one lady amongst these fart joke telling boys, but I've, as a woman of 40 now, I've learned so much about like meeting people where they are, right? We all have these dynamics, and I think just knowing that we all have something to offer in different ways, knowing that the way that we complement each other it's just a really great working environment in that, like, when we all come together and we're all there syncing up, it can be so magical. Mm-hmm. And it just feels good.
Your music is meeting the world where it is, too. You're meeting each other where you are, but then this album is released into the world as it exists with something to say in its music about how it exists and how we're living right now. Tell me something about the songs that you want new listeners to keep their ears open for.
All of us are songwriters in our own right. Travis is our primary, and I think we all get so excited when we hear something new from him because he tells a story, and he doesn't presume to tell our story, but somehow we always find an element of our own within them. I'm thinking about Turned. And he talks about police marching down the street and how I think that we've all been in that moment of seeing this, whether it's on TV or in person, and just really feeling a part of something that nobody else has seen before, or maybe they have seen it before in some past existence. And I don't know. I think that that we all have something to offer in our own way, and I just really appreciate his perspective that he gives us words in those moments that we don't always have them, and putting a tune to it that can either be angry or empathetic or just passionate,
sorrowful,
exactly.
Sour, yes, yeah.
And you know, as a person that myself, as a painter, I sometimes paint when I don't have the words. Sometimes he gives me those words, and that is really, really strong and really important for me to express it in those ways. And not everybody even hears those words. Sometimes it's just a matter of like feeling those rhythms and hearing the tones and having people in the audience to experience that with us, whether they gather that in the moment or not. I'm not sure, but having the album and something that you can listen to on repeat, you know, that's an opportunity that we can offer now.
Where does the next song idea come from for you as a songwriter?
Man, you know, usually it's springtime.
Yeah.
When things are opening up and blooming. So many of the tunes I tend to write have to do with the birds and the flowers and the, you know, those are the easy subjects for me because those are the things I love to watch and always were inspired by. So that's likely where those songs come from. I'm in a season now where I'm watching my kids grow and teaching them about those things that I know. So like listening to the bird song and when my kids are like, it's the red one, you know, and when they can start calling out what kind of bird it is, I feel like I accomplished something.
That's a good day.
Yeah,
it's a good day.
Exactly.
That's Aaron Castle with the band The Cloverfold. The album is called Windfall. Up next, more South Dakota artists who have made big artistic leaps recently. Visual artist Mecca Rutherford is next. And later in the hour, the music of Amy Dias. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. A new solo exhibition is on display at the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University in Sioux Falls. You can see Dazzling Dakota, the artwork of Mecca Rutherford, now until April 25th. I sat down with Mecca in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio to talk about her paintings, the beauty of South Dakota, and her vision of the wide open skies, rolling hills, and colorful sunsets that make this region so special.
I've been a professional artist for many years.
Yeah.
But I took about 15 years off to raise my kids. I was a homeschool mom for a number of years and just focused on my family for a while. I laid down my brush, so to speak, and I dabbled here and there, but I was not pursuing a career at that time. So when I came onto the scene, I had been looking for years, where do I want to come out? And it was the Artist of the Plain show. That was the show that I felt best fit my audience that I'm looking for. And so it was my first time at that show, so, and they have these awards, and I thought, well, maybe I would get second place, you know, for 2D. And well, for the first time ever in 42 years of having the show, they actually had best of show. I didn't get second place. I didn't get first place. And I thought, oh, well, it's my first time. I'm not, you know, who was I to think? And then they announced this award that was new that year, best of show. And I got that award for that show in the fall of 2023. And then at that time, they offered me this exhibition opportunity. And I said, so you have three galleries and you have hallways. I said, what part of that are you wanting my show to be in? And they said, all of it, the whole thing, all three galleries, anything you can fill, we'll take anything. And so at that point, my eyes were wide as saucers. And I said, yes, I would love this opportunity. I'm a little nervous about it, but we can do it. So it was an amazing challenging, incredible opportunity, and it's just kind of blown the top off my career at this point. So
that's
very exciting.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. That is incredible. And that also explains to me why maybe you weren't on my radar before.
Yes.
The convergence of those things. So take us back. Let's get to know you a little bit.
Okay.
And tell me how old you are when you start painting and realizing that, you know, expressing yourself in paint and sculpture is something that you love.
Yes, so this is a fun story. For those of you that have children or grandchildren, this is how you can tell if you've probably got a visual creative on your hands. If they're always saying, look at this, mommy, look at this, grandma, look at this, look at this, look at this, you know that their eyes are just wide open to the world around them. And that was me as a child. I was always noticing the tiniest detail, the simplest shift in light and how it cast different colors around me, the iridescence of the, you know, wings on a dragonfly, those little tiny details, the intricate design of a pansy. I just used to be fascinated by violets and pansies. And so I would share those things with my family. But it wasn't until I was about in fifth grade and it was winter time and we got sent on winter break with a little art project. And for me, at least, that was very exciting. And it was a mosaic with construction paper. And most kids came back with their mosaic pieces the size of like a dime.
Yeah.
Well, let me just tell you, that was too big for me. My pieces were like 2 millimeters, my little mosaic pieces that I broke apart with the construction paper, so that I knew I needed them to be tiny because I wanted more color and I wanted more detail and more movement. And it was at that point that my teacher, she said, oh my goodness, I need to talk to your parents. And she was like, this is extraordinary.
Yeah.
And I became known as an artist ever since. And my parents, they weren't wealthy at all, but they had belief in me. And they put me in some after-school classes and actually got a summer tutor. And that started when I was 11.
Wow.
So I was known from the point of 11 on as an artist.
And that felt right to you.
It did. It did, 100%.
Felt like
it was
seen.
The perfect fit. It was. I just knew it. Yeah, so.
I love that. Were you being inspired or finding inspiration in nature at that point?
100%.
From other artists, from family members? Where were some of those early, as an 11-year-old, inspirations?
Yes, I love that question. So my father's side of the family were very wealthy, and they lived in a mansion. And they loved collecting art, both paintings and sculpture. And so I have to say that was a piece of my inspiration for sure. So as far as artists, that was my main exposure to artists. And that was in the Midwest. I grew up in Alton, Illinois, across the river from St. Louis. And so they lived in this big old mansion there in Alton. And the paintings were just extraordinary. So I used to admire them, and they were well lit. You know, it was almost like being in a little bit of a museum. And so that was a piece of it, but really it was nature that I would say was my greatest inspiration, yeah. God's creation.
Yeah. Were you given a lot of time to play outside, to be?
Yes. I mean, yeah. This was in the 70s, yeah. right? And I grew up 70s. And so it was, everybody was outside. They were, you know, unlike today when kids are, you know, just, you got to look for them to find them. Back then we were just all of us. And I grew up with an alley where everyone drove into their driveway or their garages were in the alley. And so we played in the alley, and that was just, we were constantly outside all the time.
Yeah. So then you have to learn again and again, though, there are probably a fair amount of people who would say in fifth grade, I wanted to be an artist, that mm-hmm. there is something else that someone finally tells them to be quote unquote practical, or they fall off that path and think I need a backup plan or I need this or that. Take me a few steps forward into those mm-hmm. early formative high school, college years mm-hmm. where you keep on that path. Were mm-hmm. there times when mm-hmm. there were invitational off-ramps, whether you wanted them or not, where people were like, think twice about this?
Yes, yes, yes. So my father's family had been very wealthy. My mother grew up oldest of 10 in a coal miner's family in very southern Illinois. And so she was a woman who grew up knowing that you have to work hard to pay the bills and you have to be realistic. And so she and my family had always encouraged me as an artist up until the point of the end of high school. Yeah. And then it was like, okay, now what are you going to do in college? You don't probably want to aim towards being an artist because mm-hmm. you've got to be able to support yourself. And, you know, honestly, she was right. For many years, I had to do other things to kind of keep the boat afloat. Mm-hmm. More recently, while I was homeschooling, I became a Norwex consultant. I didn't intend on actually doing that, but I love the products, and I was trying to get my life healthier and get the chemicals out. So I did that on the side because I could do that more quickly in and out and work around my family schedule and that kind of thing. And it was a nice income for those little hours I had to give to it. Whereas art, you know, to create a painting, it could take several weekends. And then you've got the problem of, but the challenge of selling it, you know, the joy of trying to sell that painting, and it could take 6 more weeks
to sell.
You have
the business aspect of things.
Yes. Yeah. So I actually went through 6 different majors, 3 universities, and still ended up with 2 degrees in art because I just kept coming back to it. I mean, we're talking architecture, interior design. Yeah. I was a language major for a while, elementary education. And what it boiled down to for me was, well, I can always work as a teacher. If I need to, I can teach. And so I think that's what a lot of artists will do. You just find a way. You find a way.
Yeah.
So I have all these other skills. What's great about what I did, like with Norwex, is that's a lot of business, and I didn't really have a strong business side. Mm-hmm. And so as an artist, find things that you can do that can pay the bills, that can actually strengthen your desire to be an artist. Sure. And that's really what God did in my life, is it seemed like a strange side road to be a consultant. But I learned that sales and business, that all that is about service. Yeah. It's about helping people find what they want and they need. And now I'm able to bring that into my business as an artist. And it's just a lot of fun.
That relationship building.
It's huge. Yeah. It's everything. Is what do you need and how can I help your dreams come true?
So take me to the part where now you have more time, which is another, I think, sticking point for some people where they are artistic or creative and they think, oh, if only I had more time, I would do more. Yes. And then they have more time and then they don't do more and they get stuck in that, why am I not doing more with the time that I was so almost coveting before? Now I have it. I don't know what to do with it. So when you transitioned into having larger blocks of time, how did you step into that part of your career?
Oh, I love that question. I love that question. For those of you who have a dream and you know you're going to pursue it, it's just a matter of time. But you also have to support yourself, your family. You've got the priority of the essentials that have to be taken care of. For me, that was continuing to serve my customers with Norwex, because that is income and it continues to be income that is helpful to our family. And I have customers I love and I want to care for, right? But I had to kind of scale back on that and while keeping it afloat. And so it took time. It took a good year to kind of transition. I was doing in-person parties and then during COVID more online. And I had to transition from the online down to just you know, sort of just caring for everyone. And so anyway, it was about a year of transition. And there were some days when I was starting to get my studio up and going, and I was trying to just get everything set up and kind of get a feel for the space. It's a space in my basement. It's a very nice space in my basement. It has a window, thankfully. And I love it. And so, but getting that up and going and just getting my rhythm and getting some images that were inspiring to me that I could. So what I told myself, I think I'd read a book for artists. It's a really good one. I have a number of good artist books. But one of them talked about, even if you only have 1 hour, be faithful to yourself and take that 1 hour. Because 1 hour in one day could be 5 hours in a week, could be 20 hours in a month, and that could create something that you have to show for your dream. Yeah. And so that's what I did. Usually with oil painting, it's really hard to get anything done in an hour because I kind of just get warmed up after about an hour. Yeah. But I did it. I did it. Even if I only had an hour, I'd get down there. And then that hour turned into two, turned into three. Once you begin, you get inspired. So
Tell us about your technique, this sort of oil painting, but it's also sculptural, the combining of the two. And obviously we're on the radio, so people can find some images on our website, and we'll put some links to the website of the exhibit.
Wonderful.
But
thank
describe
you.
In words the combination between oil painting and a bit of a sculptural element.
So I, as I said, I am a sculptor and a painter. Painter really first. The sculpture piece actually happened because I was encouraged to try other things because of the financial, reality of maybe not being able to support myself as a painter. What I always wanted to be was a painter, but I was going and getting my sculpture degree because I was thinking that was a foundation to go on and become an architect.
Okay.
So that's where the sculpture came in. Well, while I was focusing just before I graduated on completing my painting degree along with that sculpture degree that I already had in the bag. I didn't want to graduate just with that, so I went one more year. I had gone to college for such a long time. They said, you can go one more year and get your painting degree too. And I said, well, that's what I really wanted. I don't want to go on and do architecture now. So sometimes you just don't know until you come along down the road. So I had all this sculpture experience, all these materials experience, and it started out because, I was a poor college student, and I had a friend that was, he was going back to school, and he was older, and he had a lot of money. He had done really well in his career. And so he would have these massive piles of oil paints on his palette. And he has one big pile that was this mucky brown green, and he was just going to throw it in the trash. I'm like, oh, how can you throw all those oil paints away? I'll take it. And at that point, I took that and I sculpted the spines of a 5-foot saguaro cactus with this dripping sunset behind it. And my mother still has it. It's a treasure. It was my first sculpted painting, but it was solid oils. And if you know anything about solid oils, it took 9 months for it to fully dry through the spines. They stuck out about an inch or so off the canvas. So that's kind of where it began in my 20s in college. And as the years have gone on, I realized, well, that's too expensive and that takes too long to dry. So I do more of a, it's almost like a decoupage. I have strips of acid-free newsprint that I paint with gesso, a combination of gesso and house paint. I crumple it up and I build kind of an armature underneath, which is like a skeleton. Sure. And then I lay it over with flat painted paper with that gesso mix over the top to create like muscle. And then the skin is this product that's like white toothpaste. It's called molding paste. It's a golden product. Yeah. And then I use that to either paint or texture over the top to kind of pull it all together. So it's kind of a 3-stage sculpting process. And then I paint it with oil paints.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So, yeah.
Did you invent that, learn that?
I created that myself.
That process,
okay. I started in college, admittedly, with flat out latex cheap white house paint and newspaper.
Okay.
But now I've upgraded to acid-free newsprint and gesso. More long-lasting products.
So the collectors can buy your art and know that it's going to be passed down.
More museum quality. Yes.
So the paintings are beautiful and inspirational, and you're looking for, as you said, the natural world and God's creation as it speaks to you. Tell me a little bit about how you go and find something to paint. And then take that image and that, because you're not just taking an image, you're taking a feeling.
Exactly.
Back into your studio.
Yes, I'm always looking for what takes my breath away. That's okay. What I'm looking for. Whether I'm in a number of South Dakota, I have to say it's not just me taking these shots. It's also photographers, and I always give them credit, professional and hobby photographers. A lot of online on Facebook photographers groups, South Dakota photographers groups, because, I mean, they're in parts of the state that I can't get to. I mean, I can't afford to just be driving around taking pictures all the time. But anytime I travel, I've got my very old handy-dandy Nikon, and I am out snapping shots. And my poor husband, Jim, he has to pause and turn around, flip Ueys in the strangest place. I'm like, honey, please slow down, pause. I'm sorry, we have to stop. And what I'm looking for is what takes my breath away, and usually what I see is layers. I've got an up-close layer, a mid-ground layer, far distance layer, and then the sky. Or it's the feeling. The feeling has captivated me. And so that's what causes me to pause and snap, or pause and contact the photographer whose work has taken my breath away.
Yeah. So. How do you create time to do that and be in a moment for even people who aren't painting? Mm-hmm. Maybe they've purchased a painting, or maybe they're just outside looking at something they find inspiring. You also have to have the time to look at the art that's hanging on the wall, or look at the art that's outside your window. You got to create space for that.
You do. You do. I encourage everyone. There's this whole aspect of life of just seeing and appreciating, of drinking in through your eyes, taking the time to go to galleries, museums, of course, any of the shops, you know, around town that have paintings, just take the time. And even if it's paintings you don't understand, that's okay. Yeah. Bring a friend, bring a loved one, and have a conversation. Which one do you like best and why? That's a really fun question. And I wanted to encourage everyone, if you look at a piece of art and it's confusing to you, don't think for a minute you shouldn't be looking at it. You are an expert on what you like and why. You come into any gallery space, any museum, as your own expert, because you are there to decide what you like and why, and to just assess what you're taking in. If you don't understand the art, it's not because you're not an expert. It's simply because you don't know the heart of the one that created it. Sometimes you look into the depth of their cultural context, their life experience, and you'll understand better why they use so much red and black and scary colors, you know, like that. And so sometimes it's looking into the history of the painting, and it just opens up a whole nother interesting side of life to be more observant.
Yeah. So how much does the biographer or the biography of the artist fold in then for you when you look at other people's art? And when you think about your own, what kind of biography are you putting up on the walls at this exhibit?
it's really, really important, because I have a history, you know, like many people, I have heartache in my past as well. And I see heartache all around me. I mean, war and fires and just so much pain out there. We all can choose whether we're an artist or not, what we focus on, right? And so with my art, I could certainly focus on war. I could focus on devastating loss, because that is all around me. But for me personally, I find when I focus just on that, I mean, those are the things I think about, and I need to pray. I need to offer assistance. I need to say, how can I help? So it's not that I want to ignore those aspects of life. It's just that as far as what I want to enjoy myself or what I want to encourage others, I want to think about the beautiful things in life, because there is so much beauty around us, and I want to think of hope, and I want to think of peace, and I want to think of comfort, and I want to draw others into that. And that's really my heart and my passion with my art, is to draw you in to the painting, because you want to go into it, for one thing. Like you feel invited, you long to be in it, just like you long to walk on a path out in God's creation, just like He invites us to enjoy the beautiful world that He's created for us. So I want to transfer that, you know, onto my canvas, and it's just supposed to be like a little window to the greater world that we're part of.
Yeah. So when you look at this exhibit on the walls, and it's open until April 25th, and you stand among that art and look at it, and there's plenty of pieces that are for sale as well for collectors. What does it say to you? Does it surprise you to see it all in gallery
together?
Spaces and hallways? Like, what's that moment like?
Yes, it's the first time. I've been in big shows before, but never just my show. I've never had a large solo show. So it's thrilling. It's a little bit, it's out of body, to be honest. Like, a little bit, I feel beside myself. Like, oh, these are the same paintings that I poured myself into in the quiet of my little studio in my basement in Sioux Falls. You know, that is kind of, I have to really like almost touch the wall, touch the paintings to kind of remind myself this is real. Yeah. You know, it's honestly, I mean, I could cry, because it's a dream come true. Yeah. It's really, Center for Western Studies has given me an incredible honor, both in my best of show in 2023, fall of 2023, and then now in this opportunity. And they've been so supportive, so encouraging, and wonderful posters and postcards and all those things. So, yeah.
And one of the ways, one of the reasons and the missions of that organization is because art from here matters.
Yes, yes, to strengthen our culture. Mm-hmm. And because it helps us feel like we're a part of something beautiful. We're a part of something majestic and amazing. Yeah. And the art does speak to the people that live here and the impact that they made, I think. And I want to give honor to this state that has unfortunately had to bear under the burden of being called the Plains. You know, technically we are the Plains, but I want to draw out in my work that the Plains are far from plain. They're quite extraordinary in so many ways.
That's Mecca Rutherford. You can see Dazzling Dakota at the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University in Sioux Falls until April 25th. Mecca will present a live painting demonstration at the exhibit March 27th from 6 to 8 p.m. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's head into the weekend with another upcoming South Dakota musician. Amy Dias is a singer-songwriter in the Black Hills and part of the Dahl Art Center's Emerging Performing Artists Program. Dias joined me from SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City.
I just moved back to the Black Hills after being abroad for several years, and my younger sister and her husband have been very involved in the Dahl program, going to open mics as well as the emerging artists nights. And so the first time that I went to that was to see my nephew play at that, and my sister and her husband, and then have been playing at the open mic since then. So yeah, it's been a really awesome way to connect with artists in the community and just to be able to get out and get on stage in a really great environment.
When you were teaching overseas, were you teaching music or were you teaching other things?
Yep, I got my degree in K-12 music and taught in South Dakota and Montana for several years, and then went abroad to first Colombia for 3 years, Bogota, Colombia, and then Monterrey, Mexico for 4. And so both of those schools, I was teaching music in English in an international school.
Wow. All right. So yeah, did that being part of those communities change who you are as a singer-songwriter at all?
Ooh, I am just beginning to consider myself a singer-songwriter again for the first time in a long time. When I was young, it came very easily to me, and I stopped doing it for over a decade. And just in the since the pandemic, I have started to pick it back up, and it's really great to come back to.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk about that in a minute, but I wonder if we could pause here for you to play something for us. Go ahead and introduce what you want listeners to know before you play, and then I'll sit back and listen.
Great. This song is called Merry-Go-Round, and this is one of the first that I wrote in a very long time. Yeah. Generally, I write music when I can't overanalyze it enough in my head and I need to get it out of me some way when the feelings are too strong. So there's a lot of themes of love in there. And so this is my struggle with dating, called Merry-Go-Round. You break my heart and I break his heart, playing on the playground. Meanwhile, he's faking while somebody's love he's taking on this messed up merry-go-round. You know I'm dizzy, I just wanna get off. So dizzy, I've been on so long, I've been spinning. Tagged me first. I squealed with delight as I ran. But I ran with my eyes closed and left my heart exposed on this messed up merry-go-round. I've been spinning. This game of tag feels never ending. When
Nobody knows what they want. Not who we are, what we need, nor how to listen and take heed on this messed up merry-go-round. Hair. Rarely the ones who hold my hand. You know, I won't take the blame, but it's always just the same on this messed up merry-go-round. I've been spinning. I've been spinning. Somebody please, how do I get off of here? Spinning, 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 spinning. I've been spinning. I've been spinning.
Nice. Amy Dias there on SDPB live from our, I shouldn't say live, I should say seated in SDPB's Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. Thank you for that. What a great song.
Of course. Thank you so much.
All right. I want to go back to what you said before you played, which was something about the pandemic and kind of getting back into music. That was such a challenging and then sometimes artistically nourishing time for people, depending on whether what was happening in their lives. Tell me how it changed you.
I had a crazy pandemic experience because I actually experienced it in three countries. When the pandemic hit, I was still teaching in Bogota, Colombia, and there it was complete shutdown. You couldn't leave your apartment. It was pretty insane. Immediately was teaching online from my house every day and then was forced to leave there. So then I was just crazy busy with work, of course, and adjusting to teaching online. Came back to South Dakota, where it was very different, obviously, and then moved to Mexico, where I think it was somewhere in the middle. But during that time, I still taught online for an entire year. So I didn't meet any coworkers. I didn't meet any students. So I was literally trapped in my house for about a year, which prompted me to play a lot more music and finally kind of fall in love with the piano for the first time. It had always been something I was forced to do for my college, and I resented it. And then I got a really lovely relationship with the piano out of it. So, which then also started writing music again and was just, there was, you know, it's all lessons we learn and how we grow. And there was lots of growth in that time.
Right. How old were you when you started making music?
So I started playing violin at 3 years old. I was a Suzuki kid. And so then, so it's just, it's always been a part of my life. And then started writing music. I started playing guitar in middle school, somewhere around there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Musical family? You play with your sister
yes.
a lot, right? Tell me a little bit about your relationship with your sister musically.
My whole family is musicians, and my sister and I have not lived in the same state or country. The same area for about 15 years and then the different countries for seven. And I just moved back and we live 2 minutes apart and we're just playing every second that we can. And, ooh, well, you add a harmony to this song and you can put some violin on this song. And it's just been amazing.
Yeah. What's the scene like? What's the music scene in the Black Hills like as far as performing and working with other artists and finding inspiration?
I just moved back to Rapid in January, mid-January.
Okay, yeah.
And so I did actually was able to hit some open mics in Spearfish that were really great at the Public House and at Killian's, had a songwriter's night. And now that I'm in Rapid, I'm finding there's tons here between the Doll. I have just recently connected with some other musicians on Facebook, and it looks like there's open mics all over the place. So I'm just excited to be to do music with other people. Like I'm a collaborator, and that's how I function best. So
yeah. What makes a good collaboration? How do you, what's the vibe like? Do you have to just really, is it technical or is it more something that you feel?
Ooh, I'm trying to think about that. Yeah. My collaborations in the past for my own music have been with my family, which is always an interesting thing. Between my dad and I have differing opinions and both being hard-headed or whatever. But I'm excited to explore collaborating with others more. I can't say that I've actually done that much.
Yeah. So when you enter a space like that and say, okay, well, I'm new here, I'm going to go find the, you know, you're also listening. You find the open house and you take your turn on the stage,
yes.
But you're also sitting back and hearing what the sound is right now of this time and place. What are some of your early impressions of the other people that are around making music in Rapid in the Black Hills right now?
There is so much going on. I just have gotten to perform with Abby Leach a couple times recently,
yeah.
who is so very talented. And of course, I've just been so impressed with how my sister and her husband sound gets more and more tight and clean over the years and really impressive. Last weekend was a women's showcase in the Black Hills,
yeah.
and there was so much talent there. Like, there's just so many different styles going on, but so much good stuff.
Yeah. When do you know a song that you're working on is ready to try out in front of an audience? Do you have a first audience, or do you just go up in front of the open mic and say, well, here, let it rip? What do you think?
So that's funny because the song I just played for you, I just played at an open mic for the first time about a month ago, it's terrifying. let me get a glass of wine really quick first. Like, it's just, someone asked me if I get nervous playing still, because I've played my whole life.
Yeah.
And I used to say I don't get nervous if I'm prepared. And it's different when it's your own music. It's so vulnerable. It's like, here's the deepest part of my soul. Just give it a listen and let me know what you think.
Well, yeah, because it would be tempting to think, because you're a teacher, you're very used to being up in front of the classroom and, you
yes.
know, making music and expecting people to listen. But like you said, when it's your something that you've written originally, it's a different game, huh?
Yep, it's different than Donkeys Love to Munch on Carrots or whatever elementary song I would be singing.
No, I really want you to sing Big Donkeys Like to Munch on Carrots.
Oh, too funny.
Do people give you feedback? I mean, on the music then? Do they come up afterwards?
Yeah, I just made a really great connection the other day, and we'll be performing at something in Sturgis this weekend.
Nice.
Which is a showcase for... Oh, and I'm going to quote it wrong. Joyce Jefferson does it. They're reenactments from the 1890s.
Yeah.
And then there'll also be music to go along with it. So I'll be doing that. But just like, I just love being able to make all of these connections. And so she came up and was raving about me, and I was raving about her. And it's very reassuring to get that great feedback.
That is fantastic. Well, we hope that you come back and share more music with us in the days ahead. We'll leave listeners with Can't Get You Off My Mind here. But say, Amy Dias, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I just can't seem to put up a fight. Can't get you off of my
That's Amy Dias from the Black Hills of South Dakota. And that's our show for today. We hope that it served you. In the Moment is produced by Ellen Kester and Ari Youngeman. Our executive producer is Kara Hetland. Our engineer is Colton Nicholson. Our videographer is Jordan Henderson. Special thanks to our Black Hills SDPB staff for helping us connect with guests from across the state. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.
You don't deserve my time. You don't deserve this rhyme. Not the space, this place to chase. But running through my. I am a warrior goddess, and you are leaving me awless. I'm setting you free. Let me be. Quit running through my mind, through my mind, through my mind. Quit running 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 through my, running through my mind. You know what?
You know it's true.